I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called a flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of them.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative network, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Friday, June 16th, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride, to be sure. I am your host, Chris Hankley. We are all road warriors, those who would esteem ourselves to be. And so here we go. Yesterday was, I would say, a sobering broadcast, if we're on the same page there. Today, it's Friday. We'll keep it a little bit lighter. We'll do the phones. And everything is theater. Terrorism is theater. Obviously, all the world is a stage. And we're all little participants in it. Or maybe viewers of it. And the Tower of Babel is a metaphor of sorts, and everyone is being welded together and knit together in common cause and purpose, but they don't really realize it. It's happening in plain sight. We don't really realize it. And so dark forces are coming after all kinds of things, gender, children, entertainment, weaponizing, the weaponization of all things in, I would say, P2OG sort of fashion, proactive, preemptive operations group sort of fashion, covertly weaponizing things to stimulate reactions, to provoke a formidable social cataclysm, in the words of Albert Pike to Giuseppe Mazzini, August 15, 1871, outlining three world wars. And in the most prophetic letter allegedly never written, even though it's happening right before our very eyes, we're encouraged to believe. You know, because it's not on CNN. If it was on CNN in a 72-hour news cycle, everybody would be talking about it. But then, as I've mentioned recently a couple of times, as Nesta Webster cited Joseph de Maistre from 1811, if men understood the revolution today, it would end tomorrow. But what should be happening is when things like when children are weaponized and objectified and sexualized, and we're all sort of being acclimated to that, that should be criminal. And if you're going to do that and promote that, you should be taken to the edge of town and stoned to death. I'll just say it that way. But we don't have that kind of resolve in America anymore. Instead, we seem to be assimilating ourselves to every weaponized form of cultural Marxism. I don't want to get too carried away, but this is what's happening. This is where we are. And again, it's kind of a long war situation. Religion leads culture, leads politics. We target fixate on politics and maybe a little bit on culture, but we don't realize that there is a religious component to this. And there is, you know, you hear about pushback on certain things. The Blaze did an episode yesterday, and one of the excerpts is titled Companies Are Canceling Pride Month. They even spelled canceling American style with one L. I don't know. The little things. It's the little things. So companies are canceling Pride Month, ! And, you know, there's talk of brands. You know, obviously Anheuser-Busch has backtracked big time on some things and really tried to double down on the patriotic thematic elements more recently with the partnership with Folds of Honor and different things. And some of the other brands are doing the same thing. But I think if we have any fortitude in America, then we draw a hard line. We talked about this a little bit yesterday, particularly, you know, based on, I would say, you know, I've talked about Ted Kaczynski throughout the week, beginning on Monday, you know, starting obviously with his passing over the weekend, early Saturday, late Friday, something like that, officially June 10th, and saying maybe we should call June 10th a Guy Fawkes Day of a fashion. Remember the 10th of June kind of thing. Because maybe we need a reminder. And from Lynn's call yesterday, the excerpt particularly from paragraph 128, you know, this is what's happening. We are all part of, we are all cogs in a machine, part of, you know, a giant communitarian amalgamation. And as Ted Kaczynski observed in paragraph 128 of Industrial Society and Its Future, and as Lynn mentioned from the article by Paul Valentine in last Sunday's paper, well, just from paragraph 128, while technological progress as a whole continually narrows our sphere of freedom, each new technical advance considered by itself appears to be desirable. Electricity, indoor plumbing, rapid long-distance communications, how could one argue against any of these things or against any of the innumerable technical advances that have been made modern society? It would have been absurd to resist the introduction of the telephone, for example. It offered many advantages and no disadvantages. Yet, as we explained in paragraphs 59 to 76, all these technical advances taken together have created a world in which the average man's fate is no longer in his own hands or in the hands of his neighbors and friends, but in those of politicians, corporation executives, and remote, anonymous technicians and bureaucrats whom he as an individual has no power to influence. And there is a religious component to this. This is why I say, for example, that communism is Christianity. You know, if you read Nietzsche and The Will to Power, for example, you know, you hear about this sort of commingling, the manipulation of terms, Christianity and communism in particular. And you know, I've talked a lot about communism recently and what it actually is in very, very simple terms. It's just the counterfeit of Acts chapter 2, the Pentecostal moment. And so communism is Christianity just without God. And this is why when you see these kinds of systems come online, when the state replaces God or seeks to, you can't actually replace God, but when man turns his back on God and seeks to replace God, and it's not actually the state, because, you know, I mean, we hear the truth is sort of right out in plain sight, even though it's kind of hidden in plain sight. When we hear that, for example, we hear about central planning everywhere across the country. Central planning, central planning. Well, is there a central plan and is there a central planner? It seems so because, for example, you know, again, you read the work of the hierarchy over at the Lucius Trust, which was originally the Lucifer Publishing Company, but for obvious reasons, the name was changed. The Lucifer Publishing Company, Lucius Trust, work of the hierarchy, says there is a plan. Might as well say there's a central plan. What is it? It's Genesis 11. Spoiler alert. It's Genesis 11 in simple terms. It's the Tower of Babel. Now that they're all working together, they can do anything that they purpose to do. You know, that's what's happening all around us. People are being welded together in that sort of fashion. And don't even realize it. The Tower of Babel is a metaphor. The Great Wall of China is a metaphor. You know, the interwebs are a metaphor. The pyramids are a metaphor, regardless of who actually built them. You get people working together. They said, come now, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach into heaven, and let us make for ourselves a name, you know, a name that will endure throughout the ages, kind of a fraternal order type of a thing. Otherwise, we'll be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. The Lord said, behold, they are one people, and they all have the same language. And this is what they began to do, and now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them. That's what the kings of the earth and the merchants of the earth that you read about in Revelation chapter 18, for example, that's what they're up to. And so here we are. This is what's happening. So there are signs of resistance, but still the impetus, the impelling force, as the work of the hierarchy puts it, is at work. The forces that we surround ourselves with, or that we gravitate to, by their very nature, lend themselves to this process, the anti-God sort of process, which is why, for example, in the Will to Power, Nietzsche wrote that nihilism is where this is all headed, ultimately. You know, or why, again, Pike in his letter to Mazzini wrote that we shall unleash a formidable social cataclysm. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists. That's you can see evidence of this in all sorts of places. You know, again, Jacques Ellul writing The Meaning of the City in 1954 and talking about the same thing. The purpose and the meaning of the city was always to kill the country. And it's a reflection of the story of Cain and Abel, he said. So this is where we are. And again, even though most people don't realize it, the evidence is all around us. We just have to have eyes to see and ears to hear, perhaps. So again, some of the evidence, you know, these stories that we see, some of the headlines, for example, that you can see at RBN right now. One of the top headline from the People's Voice TV. Burisma energy accountant who blew the whistle on Biden bribery scheme found dead. The chief accountant at Ukraine's Burisma Energy, who offered to provide U.S. authorities with damning evidence regarding financial crimes involving Joe and Hunter Biden, has been found dead before she could testify. The whistleblower, who had been identified as the wife of the former Burisma owner, Mikhail Olissin, who also died in suspicious circumstances during the years of the Obama administration when Vice President Joe Biden and his son Hunter Biden were active in Ukraine. Story goes, Giuliani discussed the fate of the now-deceased whistleblower during an interview on Newsmax's Saturday Report with Rita Cosby. So, you know, this reminds me of the conversation yesterday and Lynn and Marilyn's point about the Joe Biden clip that we play on the regular from Joe Biden's conversation with Richard N. Haass, Council on Foreign Relations head, and Michael Carpenter, senior director of the Penn Biden Center for Diplomacy and Global Engagement, former U.S. Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense. And the excerpt that we play, you know, maybe we should play it, actually. That little excerpt where, well, you know. So they, you know, I was walking to a press conference and I said, you know, I'm leaving here in about 6 hours. I said, if the prosecutor's not fired, you know, I respectfully disagree. I don't think, and I was thinking about that yesterday, I don't think if you listen in broader terms that it changes the criminality of what he's saying. You know, this is, I still believe firmly, it's a shakedown. You know, this is quid pro quo, or, I don't know, extortion. It's maybe not extortion, but it's definitely coercion. So, and we could play the broader excerpt, but I really, maybe we'll have to talk about that some more and see exactly, maybe I'm missing something, but my assessment is the soundbite really stands on its own. Well, son of a gun, you know. The prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. And I think the evidence of that is the historical record. You know, look what's gone on before and since in the area. And that includes, obviously, this most recent story. The whistleblower, the latest, suspicious death connected to this story. So perhaps we would say Scranton-sided. I mean, the Obama administration was a continuation in a fashion of the Clinton administration, and obviously the Biden administration, a continuation of the Obama administration, as Who was it that said that? With Sebastian Gorka, it was Lee Smith, right? In that video that disappeared, actually, we found a copy of it. Joe Biden, as even Democratic voters know, no longer exists. There's no such thing as Joe Biden. He's an avatar. So who is it? It's Barack Obama. So said Lee Smith. And I think he was absolutely right. So some of the other news that you can find on RBN related, I would say, middle school students openly protest Pride event in Burlington, Massachusetts. What is happening when this is part of the school curriculum? This is what I mean by, if you read the work of the hierarchy, this is what is happening. This is the activism where the clash of civilizations is being fomented. This shouldn't have to be a part of the so-called educational process that children are being indoctrinated into. It's not just the subject matter, as horrifying as that is. The bigger problem is, as I have been trying to explain, and I think we should play the Sociocracy video that I've mentioned this week as part of the consensus building process. That's what's happening. School children are being conditioned to believe that they have no identity apart from the colony or the herd. And if you're not marching in lockstep with the herd, then you, not only does your voice not matter, which would be bad enough, you don't exist apart from this echo chamber, which is actually the opposite of reality, kind of like with all of the technology. If ChatGPT is writing your, you know, speech or your paper or whatever, and again, it's just a really clever plagiarism engine with fast math. It's nothing fancy or magical, but Arthur C. Clarke's third law. Clarke's third law is in full effect here. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. So, I mean, it's really fast, and we can't see how it's working, you know, out in plain sight without opening up the box and understanding how the logic gates work and everything. So it's magic. Ooh. But it's not. But if we allow this continuation of technology to subsume mankind, then, as I've been saying, which I think is sort of in keeping with Kaczynski's industrial society and its future, at what point do we cease to exist? And you can see where all of this is going. It started with God. Nietzsche says God is dead, and there are some other authors who say the same thing. And then comes mankind. The end of history and the last man, kind of thing. So maybe we should go back, and there are some lines that we shouldn't be crossing. And there are folks like John in Tennessee and Fred in Iowa and others who have said that. I forget the way that it was put, I think by John in Tennessee, but, you know, there are things that we uncover that we shouldn't be uncovering. And, you know, for that matter, folks like Chuck Missler have said the same thing. Things that, you know, we should be investigating, but there are things that we don't need to uncover. And you think of all of those guys throughout history that have contributed to the Western esoteric tradition, and math is the universal language they say. You have folks like Bertrand Russell and Principia Mathematica, these kinds of things. We can understand and divine the secrets of the universe just without God, apart from God. And again, whenever this starts happening, we can see the evidence that when man drifts from God, the worst kinds of things happen. Nothing good. There's nothing good apart from God, the Bible says. You can see that in very simple and plain terms, on a macro scale and on a micro scale. So anyway, with this story, the middle school students openly protest Pride event in Burlington, Massachusetts. As I said earlier this week, and I've been talking about recently, this calls to mind this consensus building that is occurring that people don't realize it's at a meta level, so that it's not perceived directly, but it's in everything. It's in the everything from the way decisions are made in business and in social circles and in academic institutions, think tanks, and so forth. People are being encouraged to think, as the title of the video indicates, sociocracy, the operating system of the new economy. Really? Very interesting. From that all the way to the resistance operating concept, which is the ghost of Gene Sharp, we have to, you know, somebody somewhere decides that we all should be involved and active in something, and nobody stops to pray about it. That's the thing that you see in the sociocracy model. Everybody's voice is heard, yeah, except God's. Nobody stops and says, you know what, why don't we pray about this, and let's not move forward on anything until we feel like we're hearing from the Lord on this. So, not doing that. In other news, some of the other things that you'll see posted on RBM, the Safeway story. Safeway accused of bamboozling nearly 1 million shoppers. And maybe we are pushing back against Edward Bernays. Pretty amazing. Caleb Haley bought a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream at Safeway in one of the grocery giant's buy one, get one free promotions, paying $7.49. The same tub cost $4 the day before the deal started and dropped back down to that price immediately after it ended. Alleged promotional pricing practices like these by the nationwide grocer are deceptive and illegal, according to a lawsuit Haley filed this week, claiming nearly 1 million consumers have been harmed, and so they keep having pushback and paying fines and having put, but it's working. So, you know, we make a lot, we pay a little in legal pushback, and rinse and repeat. But again, what would happen if Americans just said, you know what, if this is how you do business, no thanks, Safeway, we're done for good. We're done. And 300 million people said, that's it for Safeway. And so if you start thinking in those terms, then these brands that, like Unilever, that amalgamate all the other brands, and suddenly they have hundreds of brands in their stable, that can be a good thing for them, but it can be, you know, in Sun Tzu sort of fashion, if you're big, then you're vulnerable, and if someone doesn't like one brand, they decide they don't like the way your umbrella does business, then guess what? Yikes. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Consider this. dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214 or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special.
Welcome back. So, you know, we talked a lot about this stuff, I think, really kind of last week, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday in particular. Last Friday, we talked a lot about this stuff. We played the clip, you know, Brian Michael Jenkins explaining what he meant by terrorism as theater. And the target, obviously, he said, is the people watching, and you know, you can feel that. Again, the truth is right out in plain sight. You know, so the targets of the terrorist attack, the actual victims, he said, the actual victims, other than a broad symbolic sense, had little importance to the terrorists. The actual target of the violence, as opposed to whom the violence was aimed at, the target of the violence was the people watching terrorism, people watching the theater, deliberately choreographed violence to achieve dramatic effects that would cause people to exaggerate the strength of the terrorists, the importance of their cause, et cetera, et cetera. But who creates these terrorists? And who is behind the Mockingbird press? The mighty Wurlitzer. Remember Hugh Wilford's book? The Mighty Wurlitzer, How the CIA Played America. And Frank Wisner's Metaphor. Some people recall. But, you know, kids these days, they don't know. So, what do you do? From Hugh Wilford's book, Mighty Wurlitzer was the metaphor Frank Wisner, the first chief of political warfare for the CIA, used to describe the CIA's array of front organizations, quote unquote. Did you know, by the way, that NQTEL is a venture capital arm of the CIA, and now it represents the broader intelligence community because it's all welded together now. And we were told historically that was a bad thing because as well, Lord Acton probably put it best, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Speaking of a central plan, we heard historically in America that this was probably not a good idea, but anyway, Frank Wisner, first chief of political warfare for the CIA, used to describe the CIA's array of front organizations. They were, he said, capable of playing any propaganda tune he desired. So who created the Afghan Mujahideen through Operation Cyclone? Rhetorical question. Who is behind the Mockingbird Press? What did William Colby testify to during the church committee hearings in the 70s? What did he say? What did we hear about credentialed journalists? What did George Herbert Walker Bush say after that as the head of the CIA, that we wouldn't have credentialed journalists on staff anymore? So now what do we hear according to a source? Sources say, what sources? And we know for a fact that there are journalists that get fed stories and they think that they're doing something great, only to realize that now they are the handmaiden of these interests. And they've been suborned effectively, in the language of John Brennan. You know, you think of Mike Pompeo and his shocking intimation about foreign policy, and probably not just foreign policy, We lied. We cheated. We had entire training programs. So who's in charge of all of these things? And that brings me back to this whole deal, again, from sociocracy to the resistance operating concept, the ghost of Gene Sharp. It's all the same thing. The Gerasimov doctrine that allegedly doesn't exist equals the narrative arc in storytelling, which is the same old cliche that the storytellers rule the world. This is where we're at. This is modern warfare. Color revolutions of one fashion or another. You know, Klaus Schwab's five pillars of control: government, directive power, business, innovative power, civil societies, the power of concern. And again, focusing primarily on those last three as change agents: business, the civil societies, the power of concern, academia, the power of truth, and the media, the power of influence and persuasion. Who is behind these five pillars of control? You know, most of this is illusion. Government, again, is a euphemism for someone's personal interest. Because you and I are not writing legislation. You and I probably don't even know somebody who's writing legislation. But legislation is being drafted and passed. I think if we want to score legislative types, congressmen, senators, we could score them on their ability to resist passing legislation. You can't. I know that I've had this discussion somewhat casually on this broadcast, but you can't legislate morality. I forget who it was that objected to what I said, and I said, well, let me just clarify. Then you can't effectively legislate morality. You cannot. And I believe it's Romans chapter 7 that mentions that the law is antagonistic to the flesh. So the more legislation you pass, the more antagonistic that is to the flesh, which is to say, the more laws you pass, the more you can expect illegality and criminality to be on the rise. They're inversely proportional. And, you know, not to mention you're going to criminalize everything eventually. Which is where you get to Harvey Silverglatt's book, Three Felonies a Day, How the Feds Target the Innocent. And, you know, even Harvey Silverglatt says that most people commit at least three felonies every single day without realizing it. And in that kind of a society, it seems like it's a short trip from there to the infamous Lavrenti Beria quote, "Show me the man and I'll find the crime." And again, this is what happens when we drift from God, which is why religion leads culture, leads politics. But we target fixate on politics and a little bit on culture. But we've gone through the looking glass and down the rabbit hole, so we're seeing everything backwards. Anyway, before we run out of time in this segment, I do want to play the sociocracy video. Sociocracy, the operating system of the new economy. How does this consensus building exercise work? And again, this is a companion, I would say, to those two articles, the one that Larry sent me, Change Agent Gene Sharp's Neoliberal Nonviolence Part 1, and also definitely Part 2 in the consensus building. Because that's – and I'll give you an excerpt after the clip. But look, can we play the clip real quick? Sociocracy, the operating system of the new economy. Maybe not. I guess not. Okay, here we go.
You want to make a difference, and you want to make a difference together. Working together, getting things done, can be fun. We long for that experience. You can be effective and open in a way that respects everyone in your group. You want your group to make decisions fast, to hear everyone's voice, and to enjoy success. Sociocracy came from the Netherlands and has spread all over Europe, the US, and the world. It is an established, tried and tested governance system, ready for you to use. Some people prefer to call it dynamic governance. Let's look at how decisions are made in sociocracy. An issue will come to a working group.
So I was contacted because there was an issue with...
The group will create a full picture of what is going on. They will follow a process to come to a proposal that takes everybody into account. In sociocracy, we want all voices to be heard. One tool to do that is to talk in rounds. Rounds make it easy for people to speak, and since you know you will be heard, rounds also make it easier to listen. We want to make good decisions and have all voices and concerns get equal consideration.
Okay, I think we covered everything.
Yeah, I think this should work for everyone too.
Decisions are made by consent. We ask, is this proposal good enough to try out? Does anyone object to the proposal? Not everyone gets their personal preference. We figure out a way to improve our proposal until it is good enough and everyone can consent to it. The whole group takes responsibility for the objections and seeks to address the underlying concerns.
So let's see if we've dealt with all objection and do a consent vote.
I consent.
No objection.
No objection.
I consent.
Consent.
No more objections.
I don't have any objections, so it looks like we have consent.
In sociocracy, we call the working groups circles. Each circle has an aim. A shared purpose. Circles make decisions about responsibilities that are in their domain. The people who actually do the work together decide together. They know best what needs to happen. They do the work. They see what works and what doesn't. Let them make the decisions. How do we make a whole from the parts? In sociocracy, we do this through linking. Every circle has a leader and a delegate. The leaders and delegates of the department-level circles together form the general circle. Information can now flow back and forth through the entire organization. The leader typically lets the circle know the overall operational plan and what needs to be done. The delegate makes sure the department circle's experience is heard in the general circle. We call this the double link. Sub-circles are also double linked. That way, we get maximal transparency and efficiency throughout the whole organization. When decisions are put into practice, it is often thought as a one-way street. However, in order to get closer to our goals, we have to make sure we measure the outcome of our decisions in order to find out if what we're doing is actually working. We can only get better if we listen to what needs improvement and what is working well.
When we decided this, we totally forgot to take into account.
The circle may decide to revise their policies and practices, or the circle might decide to extend the feedback process by involving other circles, like their mother circle or a helping circle, to get more input on how to make a decision that is within the range of tolerance of everyone who is affected. We can continually adapt to our changing world. We don't get stuck.
Everybody can have their voice in this.
And we will always work something out that everyone can consent to.
More people can participate deeply.
Our circle structure helps us to be effective
and fully transparent in our organization as a whole.
Not everything will be perfect right away.
But if we keep experimenting, our organization as a whole will get better all the time.
If you are inspired to introduce sociocracy in your organization, we can help.
All right, so we are skipping the break here to sort of finish, just sort of wrap up this point. I think we are. Oh, okay, we are. So sociocracy is a myth, i.e. a lie. What? What are you saying? No, it's a myth. Again, Clark's third law is in full effect. Why? Because of the psychological biases at work. No one is going to want to admit to these. No one wants to admit weakness. No one is going to readily admit or acknowledge these. But there are psychological forces, biases, that are being weaponized, essentially. And to give you some examples of what I'm talking about, at the Ash Conformity Experiment, you know, somebody says the wrong thing, but a couple of people agree. And so actually we should probably bump a couple of things up in front of Ash Conformity. So there's confirmation bias through the Delphi technique. So Delphi technique creates confirmation bias, lends itself to Ash Conformity Experiment bias where, you know, so through the Delphi technique, you have, one person introduces a thing. Maybe I should back up. So Price and Pareto, Price's law, the square root of the number of people involved actually run the operation. Pareto, same thing, 80-20, 20%. Well, 80% of the work or decision-making is done by 20% of the people. Price, Derek DeSola Price said it's actually the square root of the number of folks involved. So you have those, that number of folks introducing ideas. And if you go back to, kind of the Rhodes-Milner roundtable group sort of concept, or that holographic structure that Frank Kitson mentioned, for example, it's in a number of things, but the diagram that I mentioned from Kitson's low intensity operations all the time around, I think, page 150, 156, something like that. You smith your talking points in these groups and places, these clubs that Toynbee talked about, the Fabian circles and the Rhodes-Milner roundtable groups. And so from the epicenter of the group, the monad in esoteric terms, the idea ripples out to these other groups where you have one person come to this group, and in Price's law or Pareto principle sort of fashion, they introduce the idea, one or two people echo it. That's Delphi technique, which results in confirmation bias. Therefore, the Ash Conformity Experiment kicks in. And you know what, we all agree. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And there might be nuanced changes to an idea, but the fundamental idea sticks. And you have the Milgram experiment in there also. We've talked about how, starry-eyed young people who have someone who comes from DARPA or RAND or CSIS or whatever. Oh my goodness, such and such is coming. Oh my goodness. Where they get stars in their eyes. The Milgram experiment, the white coat shows up are you seriously going to challenge? We saw that through COVID. Apparently nobody was able to challenge Estelle Getty, a.k.a. Anthony Fauci. Anything that Estelle Getty says, apparently we can't challenge, even though Estelle Getty isn't really saying anything. And Estelle Getty keeps flip-flopping. So the Milgram experiment influences, the authority figure. Who's going to challenge the authority figure? Again, Delphi, confirmate, all of which results in confirmation bias, Ash Conformity experiment. All of these things are at work in these groups. And again, I think the larger concern is no one is encouraged to step away. No one is, generally speaking, when you see these exercises at work or how they are encouraged, like what we just heard, it is never it's always in this, what I would call sort of a vacuous echo chamber. It's what Mencken lamented. Democracy is the pathetic belief in the collective wisdom of individual ignorance. And, you know, the manipulation of crowds in Gustave Le Bon sort of fashion. And nobody realizes this is what's going on, generally speaking. But again, the bigger concern is that the way it is, the way the approach is advocated, it is absent from God always. Somehow the collective wisdom of individuals can divine some way forward, some third way that is, you know, and I know that, you know, the Stephen Covey types will call, if this is done right, it's called synergy. I think that's a different thing. And I think the essential missing component that identifies the nuanced difference is context. And again, I think it has everything to do with going away quietly and probably praying about it. And, you know, if you don't hear from God on it, then you don't move forward. It's pretty clear, and I think self-evident, that what is actually happening in the sociocracy model is consensus building, which gets back immediately to that article, Change Agent, or the couple of articles by Marcy Smith back in 2019, Change Agent, Gene Sharp's Neoliberal Nonviolence, Part 1 and Part 2. Consensus is a huge component. There's often a desire for radical decentralization of movement, organization, and consensus is a common decision-making method. Its politics tend, though this is changing, to be concerned with good and bad rather than interests. Though it has a revolutionary elan and invokes people power, the protest left has a middle-class character and tends to be grounded in institutions like nonprofits and the foundations that finance them rather than, for example, labor unions. Absolutely. One core assertion of revolutionary nonviolence and a key way it is spread is consensus decision making. Radical consensus building. Isn't that what a funny coincidence? And I think the greatest irony is that there, you know, at its core, it sort of opposes consensus building. It opposes a certain consensus. It's seeking to topple it. So, you know, this is the old Ouroboros. Eating itself and renewal. That's what we hear after all, right? Urban renewal and so on. That'll do it for the first hour. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.